The country is back racing strong. Support local communities and visit country.racing.com.
Breakfast with Gary Lyon and Tim Watson.
Great to have your company this morning. We're about to be joined by Ian Baker Finch. He's just sorting a couple of things out from his end.
Mm-hmm.
With the Masters kicking off at Augusta. Five Aussies in action. We've got Matt Jones, 10:12 p.m. tonight. Jason Day at 11:36. And then at 2:12, Mark Leishman. This is in the morning. 3:36, Adam Scott. And then at 4 a.m., Cameron Smith. So if you want to have a big long day watching the Masters, you got yourself sorted all day. Just while we wait for Ian Baker Finch to join us, let's have a look at John Longmire. He kicked 14 goals against Melbourne in 1990. 14 goals too.
As a 19-year-old? Was he 19 then or not?
Oh, no, he wouldn't have been 19. Oh, hang on. I'll tell you exactly how old he was. They beat Melbourne by, let me just have a look at the final score. It was the greatest shellacking I've ever seen. They kicked 31 goals, 14, 200 to Melbourne's 10-13-73.
That is amazing!
They were a freewheeling side back in those days. Not that they couldn't defend, but Dennis Pagan was coaching, and they loved to score and move the ball quickly.
31 goals?
Yeah, they kicked big scores back in the day, North Melbourne. Big scores.
Hey, we're getting ready for the Masters. Ian Baker Finch has been good enough to join us. Very busy, I would imagine. But we appreciate his time. We love it when we get to talk to him, and he'd be excited about the Masters. Ian, welcome.
Thanks very much, fellas. Good to talk to you. And yes, I am very excited about the Masters. It's shaping up to be a big week.
It is. We've got some crowds back, I would imagine. We've got five Aussies in action. Of the five, Cam Smith's been in great form. We know Adam Scott can win there, Jason Day, Leishman and Jones. Which will be the top Aussie, do you reckon?
Yeah, five in the top five, mate. That's my call.
It'd be nice. I'd be happy with that.
They all love the greens the way they are. It's like Royal Melbourne, the way, you know, really firm and fast, and it looks awesome.
Well, we can't wait. We actually can't wait. There is talk about that the course is playing a little bit differently. Is that the main difference at the moment, that it is as you suggested, really hard and fast?
Yeah, hard and fast. Like it was, you know, the President's Cup in 19 at Royal Melbourne, how hard and fast the greens were?
Yeah.
Yep. That's exactly how they are. They're just absolutely perfect. So hopefully we don't get too much rain. They're expecting a little bit of rain late at night on Wednesday. On Friday.
Hey, Ian, so do you think that does that suit Australian golfers more than maybe the Europeans and the Americans?
In general, we are more used to hard and fast, yes. If you watch the guys when it gets tough, like Matt Jones, who won a couple of weeks ago, really tough conditions, really hard, fast greens, lots of wind. The Aussies tend to do really well in tough conditions. When the Open Championship was hard and fast and dry, you know, we always did well there. And I think it was hard and fast in 13 when Adam Scott won. I know it was raining at the end, but the first 3 days were really firm. So, yeah, I think it gives us a better chance.
Hey, how do they work out the pairings or the groupings, Ian? I'm looking here. Adam Scott's got Bryson DeChambeau, who we saw some vision of him practicing over the last day or two. It was just fascinating. How do they work them out, and how significant is it who you draw to play with?
Okay, I've got the starting times in front of me. All of the past Masters champions are in the left-hand column. So you won't get two Masters champions playing together. You get all the Masters champions down the left-hand column and others, obviously, like Jason Day's in the left-hand column. He hasn't won here yet. And then they'll get maybe the top five groupings and put them together, like you've got Jordan Spieth, Cameron Smith, Colin Morikawa, Tony Finau, Louis Oosthuizen, Justin Thomas, Adam, Bryson, Max Homer, who won recently about 6 weeks ago. So they're all really good groupings, and they'll have some like Dustin Johnson, Sergio Garcia, Bubba Watson, those groups. They'll be early, late the first 2 days, and then the guys like Adam and Tony and Jordan in the afternoon, they'll be late, early. So there's a flip in the draw as well, so they have an early and a late time.
Sure.
But they do definitely pair things up. It's not random. They make the pairings, and the lesser names, those that are either older, past champions, those that don't think are much of a chance, they'll tend to be in groupings together, like Ian Woosnam, Jim Herman, Stuart Sink, is not a favoured group necessarily. So it's sort of a nondescript tea time.
So when you look at your groupings, like, is it possible that Adam Scott looks at Bryson DeChambeau and his group and thinks, oh, the way he plays is not going to suit me, or his speed of play, or the way he hits the ball off the tee could be a bit intimidating? Not for Adam, who's been there for so long, but can you be behind the eight ball when you see your grouping?
Yes, definitely. And you have to get by it. You have to stop being that way if you are. You have to look at it and look at it as an opportunity. Not a threat. And I think having Bryson sort of takes a lot of pressure off Adam, to be honest with you, because everyone will have their eyes on Bryson, and the pressure is more on him than it is on Adam to perform. So I think it's a good one. And Adam's no slouch when it comes to driving it. He's one of the top 10 guys when you look at driving, not necessarily the distance anymore, but just in general. He's one of the guys like a Sergio or a Rory that you look to be a good driver of the ball. Just Bryson's a bit of a sideshow at the moment, to be honest, as far as he hits it and the way he looks and the way he plays. He attracts a different fan, and he's in my top five picks, actually. I think Bryson will do better this time around than he did in November.
Have you ever seen anyone practice off the tee like he does?
Never, no. He's developed his own way of playing. He's figured it out. He said 2 years ago, I'm going to learn to hit it 20 yards farther. That's the number one thing in golf these days. It's not about how good you putt anymore. It's how far you hit it. And he's number one in driving. And he's 20 yards longer than he was 2 years ago. And his scoring average has gone down substantially because of it.
Which of the Australians, Ian, do you think has the best chance to win this Masters?
Cam Smith, closely followed by Adam.
And why would you have Cam ahead?
Because Cam's in, Cam, because it should suit him. You're going to have to be good around the greens this week. You're going to miss a lot of greens because they're so firm. And I think he's a very straight driver. Mm. And because it's hard and fast, his little lack of distance, not that he's short, don't get me wrong, but he's a little shorter than the longer hitters that take advantage of Augusta. But being firm, he'll make up for that. There'll be more roll. The distance won't be a problem for it.
Simon Goodwin's going to join us in just a second. Georgie Samios for a little bit of wine, then Geordie Lewis will wander in and take us through a preview of round four, which gets underway tonight at the SCG between the Swans and the Bombers. I reckon IBF, that's how I call him, IBF was impressed with the Shark ripping his kit off.
What do you think, Wisp? What made you think that?
But when you asked him the question, he went, oh.
Do you think that? Do you know when all the golfers get together over there, and you know how much time everybody stands around talking to each other or sits around talking to each other, do you think that would be a hot topic of conversation, what the Shark's up to these days?
I don't know, but maybe we can do a poll on former teammates we played with who would be most likely to go down the Shark path. I don't reckon Simon Goodwin, when he's got more important things to worry about at the moment, and that is the Demons. And at the start of this season, it was said that the Melbourne were under the most pressure and Simon was under the most pressure. Well, I think he'd be pretty happy with the 3-0 start, and he joins us on the line. G'day, Goody.
Yeah, morning, Gaz. Morning, Tim. Great to be on.
Good to talk to you. Would Rue be the man that would go down the nude shower sort of photo path if we had to pick one?
I don't think he's our guy. I think it's more like a Rhett Biggins type of activity, that one. He didn't mind the shape of his body, the big fellow. He was built pretty well.
What about Mod? Big Tone Modra?
Big Tone didn't mind it. Yeah, no, he's probably our man as well. There's probably a couple there that could shape up pretty well. But if you're 17 and you're in that sort of nick, it's probably not a bad bit of advertising.
Yes, not for me, I know that. Hey, well done. You'd be happy with the start. I know it's early days, and perhaps there were a few things that worked for us, for you guys, Melbourne, but you must have been thrilled with the way that they responded at various stages when the opposition team got a bit of a run on.
Yeah, look, I think that's probably been the most pleasing thing, Gaz, is that probably in all three games that we, you know, things haven't been perfect the whole way through, and there's been periods of the game where we have been challenged, and you know, our players and especially our leaders have been able to arrest that momentum and get the game back looking the way where we want it to look. And, you know, there's a really clear brand that's starting to develop within our playing group.
Hey, Goody, Maxi Gawn is playing really good football, but apart from that, the way that he represents the club, the captain role seems to fit really comfortably with him. Is he a better captain and a better leader than you thought that he was going to be?
I think he's evolving, Tim. I think it's, you know, like any position that you move into, whether it's coaching, whether it's, you know, captaincy, whether, you know, in all sorts of life and business, that the more you experience the role and develop and understand the learnings, the better you become. And Max has gone through a lot in the last, you know, 18 months around what his leadership looks like. And he's just developing. He's got a great way with people. He's understanding situations within games better and, you know, where he can have the biggest effect on the team and the game. So, yeah, you know, he's evolving into a terrific leader for the Melbourne Footy Club. There's no question about that.
Is his on-field role still evolving? Are you sort of just looking at matchups week to week and quarter by quarter to decide exactly where and how you'll play him?
Yeah, I think, you know, now we've got Luke Jackson in the team, you know, who's a really impressive young player and gives a really good lift in the ruck at times. And we can position Matt where we think the game needs us. And periods of the game, there'll be times when we need him behind the ball. And there'll be periods where we need him in front of the ball and impacting the scoreboard. So, you know, we really do dictate how the game's going. And, you know, on the weekend, you would have seen that Matt's had a significant impact for us forward of the ball. So, you know, to have four, I think not had five shots at goal. So, and that's certainly really, you know, it's just a hard thing for opposition to deal with.
With Simon Goodwin, the coach of the Demons. So we read where Ben Brown and Sam Wiedemann are a chance to play in an intra-club this weekend. Is that right? And B, how encouraging is it?
Oh, it's very encouraging. You know, rehab guys have done a great job with those two, and they're pretty much on exactly the same timeline. You know, and they'll play three quarters roughly in the VFL this week against Williamstown. And they'll play together, which is great. So they start getting that knowledge of actually playing together as well. So, you know, they've both been really impressive in the way they've gone about their business in rehab. And, you know, they both look fit and strong and ready to go.
Have you got to the bottom of the Ben Brown situation, you think? Like, you're confident that those knee issues are behind him?
Oh, we're really confident. You know, just, you know, we signed Ben for 4 years with the, I think he's got a lot of good footy ahead of him, and you know, everything that we're seeing in his rehab, we've taken it a little bit slower with him, you know, on the back of this operation, to make sure that we give that knee all the time it needs to come back and be fully fit. And you know, he's done a power of work in the last month to get himself in a position to start to play. And obviously, you know, from Ben's perspective, he wants to get back and perform to a really high level.
I think probably at the beginning of the year or before the season even started, when you were looking at how your forward line was going to set up, you probably had both Wiedemann and Brown in there somewhere. In the way your side's played in the first 3 weeks, has your thinking changed in some way? Do you think you'll be able to play both those guys in your forward line?
I think it's a great problem to have, Tim. You know, we're very open-minded as a footy club about who plays in our team, and those things sort themselves out. Yeah, we recruited Ben Brown to certainly come in and support, you know, our young tools, which were, you know, Sam Wiedemann and Luke Jackson. You know, it's a big ask for young tools to sustain, you know, 22 weeks of, you know, hardened AFL footy. So, you know, we brought Ben in to support that. You know, he's a high-quality player, but how they all end up fitting together, I'm not sure. And I think that's the great thing about footy. At the moment, the team's functioning really well with Luke and Tom. And we'll continue to play those guys while the team's functioning that way and make sure the other guys are ready to go when they come in.
How do you handle Cozzy Pickett? Not from an on-field point of view. It looks like you're handling and he's handling himself beautifully there. But off-field, the buzz and the excitement, everyone's going crazy for him at the moment. We were talking, do we ask for an interview with Cozzy? How do you guys handle that? What's the process there?
We let Cozzy be Cozzy. You know, he's a brilliant young man that understands the work required for AFL footy, and clearly he's playing really well, and there's a lot of interest in Cozzy. He's got an unbelievable support network around him. You know, we've got Matty Whelan at our footy club that works in the Indigenous space, and you know, we haven't seen any change in Cozzy. You know, he's just a wonderful human that goes about his business and you know, wants to be the best player he can possibly be. So we'll put that support network around him, but he's very level-headed, and you know, we've got to make sure that he continues to be Cozzy as well.
Are you conscious of trying to protect him from all the hype?
Oh, not at all. I think, you know, the best players they enjoy that. There's a part of footy where they actually rise to that sort of occasion. He's got a little bit of swagger about him. He's got that little bit of flair of the way he goes about his footy and his day-to-day. And that's one thing that we do love about Cozzy. So we've got to make sure that we harness that and make sure he enjoys that as well.
The deliberate way that Geelong play and the preparation then for you and your team in the lead-up to a game like that, is that significantly different than the way that you prepared for the Giants last week?
I think when you go into every opposition game, you look at what their strengths are and what they could potentially take away from you. And there's no doubt Geelong can play in multiple ways, and that's why they've been such a great team. You know, there's times when they can play really fast and surge and you know, have some real quality offensive play. There's other times where they use the ball to help themselves defend and get themselves stable behind the ball. So we'll prepare for all that. And to be the team that we want to become, you have to be good in all phases of the game and deal with whatever the opposition are going to be able to do. That's why Geelong have been such a great team for a period of time, is they can adapt and they can take away what you want as a footy team. So we'll be ready for that and be prepared for either way that they want to go about playing their footy.
Talking to Melbourne coach Simon Goodwin, on a broader issue, Gary sort of raised this yesterday on our program about the idea of possibly loaning players to teams that, you know, have suffered significant injuries to, you know, players on their list or ruckman or whatever it might be. Damien Hardwick supported that in theory yesterday too. Where do you stand on something like that being maybe integrated into the game?
To be honest, Tim, I haven't put a lot of thought in it, but if it's a suggestion from Gaz, then I'll get in behind it. But it's one of those things. I think in footy, you look at how we can continue to evolve our game. What are the levers that we've got that will continue to create interest, continue to help teams perform and make sure the competition's as even as we can throughout the whole season. And you're looking at a situation where, you know, we've had a mid-season draft as an opportunity. You're now looking at another potential idea that might enhance how we go about, you know, our in-season performances of a range of different teams. So I think the AFL are open-minded to all those things, as are coaches and clubs, to look at what's best for the game and how we can continue to evolve the game.
Hey, did you see or catch up with Chris Scott's comments on Monday night on the Footy Classified? He was asked a question about Brad, I think, whether Brad, he would like to see his brother return to coaching. He said, nah, it's not a very good job. It's a stressful existence. I don't know if he caught up with that, but what would you think and say to that?
Oh, I think, you know, when you asked in that context about your brother, you know, in any type of job that's got pressure and scrutiny and sacrifice, it can be a tough existence, and it does have impact on people around you. And you know, but at the same time, the people that are in those positions love it. You know, they actually enjoy it and they know it's a privilege to be. You know, I'm one of 18 coaches in the competition in Australia. I love what I do. I wouldn't trade that in for anything. But does it come with scrutiny, pressure and sacrifice? Of course it does. Does it have an impact on things around in your life? No question. But you wouldn't do it if you didn't love it. But, you know, if you were asking if you wanted your brother to tap into it, you know, you might have a different opinion. So, you know, I think I could understand those comments. But, you know, for me, it is an absolute privilege to be a senior coach.
Apart from winning, what do you enjoy about the job, you specifically?
Oh, I love seeing young players develop, young men coming with dreams of playing AFL footy. You know, that they've had as a young child and make sure that dream becomes a great reality for them, where they enjoy what they do. They develop not only as footballers, but they develop as people and leave the game. I love the competitive nature. I love the roller coaster of success and the challenge of building something really special. You know, in a really, really difficult environment where there's lots of things that will try and take you away from staying up towards the top of the ladder. So there's lots of things I love about it. The competitive element's one of them, but the development of people is certainly really high.
Tony Shaw said it makes real sense that Collingwood go after Christian Petrarca. I said it makes real sense to go after Darcy Moore. Were you happy with the way Christian handled that?
Yeah, look, Christian's, you know, he's been part of building this footy club for 6 years now, and he handled it very well. You know, he's, you know, it's a bit mischievous to be commenting on a player that's still in contract for a couple of years. And you know, there's lots of players out there in the competition that a lot of clubs would love. And I'm sure Christian's one of those guys. But you know, he's a Melbourne person. He loves the club. He loves his teammates. And one thing I am seeing with our group of core players within our footy club is they've got this this bond with each other and they want to build some success together, and Christian's one of those guys. So, yeah, I'm sure he'll be at Melbourne for a long time to come.
And Clayton Oliver, who had the ball for a company for a half and yeah, did a reasonably good job, he would be expecting O'Connor this weekend. Do you talk to him about that?
Yeah, look, we have. You know, we were really prepared for Clayton and De Boer situation last week, and we'll be prepared for the O'Connor situation. And the key thing about any of those situations is how you maximise that for the team. I thought Clayton was outstanding in the way he went about helping the team on the weekend, and it's not just about possession and individual impact. It's about how the team goes about it, and I thought Clayton was sensational. But we'll have some plans ready and make sure that we can maximise that to our advantage.
Did you get a hole in one at Cranbourne recently?
That was about 4 years ago, Gaz, but I'll take it. It was a 4-iron, 184 on the 12th in a corporate golf day. So they're rare, but yeah, it was a fair while ago now. But yeah, I'll certainly take it. It's one of the great sporting achievements, to be honest.
No doubt.
I actually enjoyed that. As much as anything.
Mercedes-Benz Berwick. Zero GST on new vehicles ordered by April 30. T's and C's apply. License 578. Here's four-time Premiership Hawk, Jordan Lewis.
Strong side, right foot. Yes!
We look forward to Geordie coming in and taking a look at the big round ahead. And round four provides plenty to talk about. Geordie, welcome.
Welcome. G'day, guys. G'day, Tim. Sometimes you can add a word in there, Tim, that can give you an out. So I heard you say blockbuster game time. Potential blockbuster.
Potential blockbuster.
And that just gives you an out.
I'm not sure it's even a potential blockbuster. Ooh, yeah. There's a lot of excitement around the way that Sydney are playing. And then there was a lot of excitement post that game on Saturday about the way that Essendon played. And there's a lot of young talent that is going to be on display tonight. But I reckon we're probably about 2 years potentially away from this being categorised as a blockbuster.
We're just seeing the birth of what could come.
Yeah. And isn't that, Gary and I talk about this all the time, isn't that one of the more exciting things about being a fan of the game? Whether you're the fan of the team, but there are certain players, I think anyone that loves footy would be thinking, I want to watch this Sydney side play tonight.
Yeah.
Not because I barrack for Sydney, but I'm hearing so much about this group of young players. I just want to see them on display tonight.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more. I think if you're a supporter of a team and you're fighting for the premiership, you can clearly see that you're in that premiership window. Well, then that is your enjoyment. You're playing against the best sides. How do you fare against the best sides? If you're not one of those sides and you are developing, up and coming, what you want to make connection with, I think, is the youngsters coming through. And certainly if you're a Sydney supporter or even an Essendon supporter after their top draft picks last year, this is a time where you get to see that on display tonight. And I'm doing the game tonight. I can't wait. I really can't. I've done two Sydney games and watched a third. I watched Essendon on the weekend. I watched Essendon in the Amy series. And for me, it's the greatest game of young talent we've seen for a long time.
There you go. Now, you've stepped out of the game more recently than what Gary and I have, okay? But we saw Sydney take apart Richmond last week in the way they played. They had a very specific way about going about the way they wanted to break down the Richmond defence. Now, is that a one-off, do you think? Or do you think that they can just turn back and play a different way against Essendon tonight, because maybe they don't have the same strengths that Richmond had last weekend against them?
Yeah, I think what we saw from Sydney on the weekend is the way you trouble Richmond. And there's been a little bit of talk and debate about, well, where do we see the zone defence sitting in our game at the moment? And I listened to Gaz on Monday night, and I think if you're coming up against Sydney, they don't allow you time to set up a zone defence of what we've seen in the past. And what they also do, if you set up a zone defence against Sydney, if you get the chance to, because they're not willing to go long down the line, it nearly is silly to set that up. So they'll switch the ball and not allow you to get set. But what I loved about Sydney, let me try and explain this. When they have the ball, as a defender further down the field, you're taking cues and little tells to where you think the ball may go. So what Sydney do is they have the ball and sometimes they might take off, you go, okay, he's taking off. This kick's going to go long. Then they go short. Another kick might be his body's facing towards the boundary. Well, that's clearly where he's going because his shoulders are facing that way. Then he kicks across his body. So what they're doing is they're making it very hard to predict where the ball may go because of the way they're using deception with the ball. So that was, you know, Richmond gets set in a defensive position, yet the way that Sydney are working at the moment and their understanding with ball in hand is very hard to defend.
We talk about unpredictable ball movement a lot here because to play any other way against Richmond, to play predictably, you know, in a sense, is to play right into their hands because they have got such great intercept defenders and players who are prepared to leave and they've got athleticism to back it up. So the thing about them, Geordie, and you've seen them a couple of times live and I saw them live, you don't know where it's going. I mean, who would have thought that Dick Wicks would have been the number one target inside 50 for Sydney on the weekend? Yet he was the one that they targeted the most. I mean, how do you defend that? I don't reckon Short was preparing to play on the number one targeted forward in the Sydney forward 50. So that's the thing I loved about him most.
Well, they've got options in the forward 50, don't they? So you look at their small forwards in Goulden, Papley, Heaney and Wicks. I mean, they're rated in the top 10 small forwards in the competition. You've got four in one sight, which is just extraordinary. And then what Richmond want, I suppose, from defensive 50 to inside 50, they want the opposition to kick the ball down the line so then they can generate that chaotic sort of rebound that they always love. Now, Sydney didn't allow that. And then once the opposition get inside their forward 50, they want you to kick that long bomb to allow their defenders to zone off. I think we all know the way that they play, but Sydney just didn't allow it. Whether that's their team makeup because they've got so many small forwards, I don't know. But that certainly, sides that have come up against Richmond and tried to control the ball and make the game less chaotic have done well.
So are Essendon capable? That's the question now. Like we can talk about Richmond, but they've got their own challenge on Friday night against Port Adelaide. From what we've seen of Essendon, on Saturday night was their best performance. You've seen them in other guys. Are they capable of stretching Sydney tonight?
Well, I think from an offensive point of view, both sides really want to be aggressive in the manner that they move the ball. I mean, you've got, in terms of age, so when you've got the 18th youngest list or the youngest list in the competition, the second youngest list in the competition, there's no fear with that. So what we'll see tonight, I'm predicting, is it might not be an old-fashioned shootout, but offense will dominate. So from a defensive end, you need to, when you get the opportunity, to make the most of those limited opportunities to make an impact because offense, I think, will control the game tonight. And if you're Essendon, well you've got to try and control the corridor. You've got to force them wide because sides haven't been able to do that at the moment. And Sydney have just been too good by foot.
How closely do you think the umpires will be watching the distance of the Sydney Swans kicks tonight? Damien Hardwick put on the agenda yesterday. He said that it confounded them. It made it really difficult for them to man up the Sydney Swans players. Obviously, we know you can take a 15-metre kick. He said a lot of those kicks that they were taking on the 45, where they were dinking the ball, weren't travelling the 15 metres. Do you think that's going to be something the umpires are taking more notice of tonight?
Well, he's got a point. There were multiple kicks on the weekend that you go, oh, geez, that might be play on. So, and that's the risk you take. If those 10-metre, 12-metre kicks are called play on because they're so shallow, well, you can get hurt out the back. But I think umpires are more willing to pay the mark than they are to call play on at the moment. We're seeing a lot more of those kicks paid. But certainly Damien Hardwick has come out and said it for a reason. So the umpires will take note and it'll be clear early. So the thing with these games is if the umpires are making a change or are hot on a specific decision, it's clear within the first 5 minutes. So as a player, you've got to be understanding if that's happening.
Is there any danger that Buddy, and this is a silly question, I know, but it's worth asking, is thrown into a forward line that is just performed so beautifully that it may not operate as efficiently as it did, given that he draws the footy so much, he's so charismatic and, you know, he leads into spaces that perhaps you wouldn't normally lead, but that's the way Buddy plays. Is that a little concern?
I think it's a fair point. I think if we saw the game that he came back in 2 weeks ago and they were looking for him, and maybe that was him not playing for a while, they wanted to look after him, they wanted to get him back into the game, but I think historically when you watch Franklin play, he would draw the ball in areas of the forward 50 that wouldn't necessarily be dangerous areas, but because he's such a big presence. So he's no doubt got to adapt a more unselfish, I suppose, part to his game. I mean, he can still lead those patterns and try and draw defenders, because the beauty about that is you open up someone else. But what I think I've seen, especially you talk about Papley, I think Papley in the past has been quite a selfish isn't the word, but he would have the license to take shots anywhere inside the forward 50. Then the change in his game that we've seen over the period of the first 3 weeks has been, I think, dramatic, you know, and he's bringing teammates into the game. And I think Bud would probably have a similar type of approach come tonight.
What about Brad Hill? We know that his form has been questioned. It was questioned last year. I think we all thought that there was going to be a reversal to that. But he hasn't started the year particularly well either again, which he acknowledges. You know him well. You played with him at Hawthorn. How do you think he'd be handling this at the moment, the focus on him? Because as he spoke about yesterday, he's never really had that on his game before.
No, he hasn't. I don't think he'd be dealing with it too well, because he's such a likeable lad. And he wants to be liked. He wants to, you know, play and be one of those players that ignites his team and be reliable. He loves that. That's what fuels his game. So he wouldn't be dealing with it quite well at the moment. But I think if you're talking to Bradley Hill and you're trying to coach him through this form rut that he's in, you just need to go back to basics, because when you're not playing so well, you've got that many thoughts going through your head. What's the media thinking of me? What are the coaches thinking? What are the players thinking? You need to just get all of that out of your mind. And yes, if you're playing wing, you are relying on what's happening in the middle of the ground, the contest. That hasn't been great. But he's not alone.
He's one of the great runners in the game, though, isn't he?
No doubt.
And repeat runners at speed.
Yep. Yeah. And I think that was probably what was damning on the weekend. Some vision that came out would suggest that he probably wasn't working as hard as he has in the past. And that could be a range of things. We know he's got the fitness, so that's not... I mean, his mind, for me, is elsewhere. So when you're playing and you're playing your best football, you are totally engaged in the game. When you're not playing well, when your side's not playing well, I think your mind can drift to self-preservation. Mm.